Mid-Morning on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Marianne Combs. This hour, building up your resume all over again. There are approximately 175,000 people currently looking for work in Minnesota. Meanwhile, the state has lost more than 26,000 jobs since March. That means more and more people are looking for work, while there are fewer and fewer jobs to be had. Many of us will have to change careers entirely in order to find work. This hour, we're going to talk about what it means to change careers midlife. We particularly want to hear from those of you who have experience with this. Are you glad you changed careers? What helped you to make the transition? Or do you regret changing careers? And if so, why? Joining me this hour is Damian Burkle, founder of Professionals in Transition and author of Career Bounce Back. He is a job counselor with firsthand experience changing careers after being laid off. Also joining us is Mark Friedman, author of Encore, Finding Work That Matters in the Second Half of Life. And he's the founder of Civic Ventures. Welcome to you both.
Good morning, Marian. Thanks for having us.
We'll go to our guests in just a moment for more of this conversation on finding work and changing careers midstream. But first, we're going to talk briefly with Dan McElroy, Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Employment and Economic Development, to get a picture of how things look in the state. Commissioner McElroy, how many Minnesotans were laid off last month?
Well, we know that the net was that we are down 7,500 jobs. That affects... It doesn't mean that there were zero jobs created and 7,500 lost. A typical month is that there are about 50,000 people who enter or leave employment, but who change jobs, the normal, what we refer to as churn.
Mm-hmm.
What we estimate is that 7,500 fewer people started jobs last month. 7,500 people who would have liked jobs last month failed to find them.
Okay.
And so the net number of jobs in the community went down by about 7,500.
Now, if we look at the last few months of employment and unemployment numbers, what trends are beginning to emerge?
The trend is continuing for about the last year that employment is soft, that we have, but it is soft in different parts of the state and in different sectors of the economy. The economy is not a kind of homogenous blanket. It is more
right.
like a patchwork quilt of sectors, and some sectors are very bad. Single-family home construction, building material manufacturers, people who make plywood, dimensional lumber, some elements of industries like windows and kitchen cabinets, if they were very dependent on single-family construction, mortgage origination and servicing have been badly hit. Manufacturing is down, although not as dramatically, and it's down in many cases, even though output is up because of increased productivity. Sectors that are up in the economy include healthcare and education. Healthcare particularly continues to add jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Financial services in areas like insurance companies, mutual fund managers, so far, although that could change, we're afraid. Larger banks continue. Our financial service segment's up about 2.8% for the year. But in general, the economy has been shedding jobs. We're down about 17,000 jobs in Minnesota, what we think of as a year-over-year basis, from October of 2007 through October of 2008. And that's on a base of about 2.8 million jobs.
We seem to have a bad phone line here, Commissioner, so we're going to let you go in just a moment. But just quickly before then, what opportunities does the state offer people for job training or other help in making a transition between careers?
That's the important question. We operate with partners, and the partners are, in some cases, counties or local nonprofits or educational institutions, 47 workforce centers around the state. And we urge people who have lost their jobs to think that their new job is finding a job and that it's a tough job to find work today, but it's happening. People are getting jobs every day. And in our workforce centers, we have a variety of programs. Training programs like how to write a resume, how to go on an interview, my personal favorite, creative job search, and a new one we've added, creative job search for people over 40. I was at the Minneapolis Workforce Center yesterday, and they were doing a program called Start Where You Stand, meaning think about your long-term career from wherever you are in your current career. And the idea of building a personal career path. We have some programs that we can help with job training called the Dislocated Workers Program. Not everyone is eligible, but many people are, and the way to start is to visit your local workforce center.
All right. Thank you so much, Commissioner McElroy.
Thank you, Marianne. Bye.
Dan McElroy is the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Employment and Economic Development. Now, back to our guests, Damian Burkle and Mark Friedman. Mark Friedman, while there are many people out there who've been laid off or are trying to even get back into work because of the rising cost of retirement, are there other people who should be looking to change their careers before the axe falls? In other words, they see that things are looking bad at their company. They know that there are layoffs ahead. Should they take the first step and not wait for the severance package?
Well, I think it depends on the individual circumstances, how much savings they have, what their work time horizon is. For some people, it really does make sense to hang on and to try to ride out the recession before making any dramatic shifts. But I think in all of this upheaval, it's important to try to gain a long-term perspective. I think we're right in the middle of a major sea change in the nature of working lives. For 50 years,
really,
we were essentially encouraging people to work shorter, and providing exit ramps and incentives for people to get out of the workforce. But over the past decade, we've started to see a realignment around longer working lives, and part of that's driven by the fact that people are living longer and healthier, that they're going to need more money over those longer lifespans. There's growing fiscal pressure for people to work longer and continue contributing into the pot. And there's a strong sense in the boomer generation that work is not just about a daily paycheck, but as Studs Terkel, who just passed away while still working into his 90s, said, it's as much about daily meaning as daily bread. So what we're seeing is this shift towards longer working lives, and many people are wanting to jump the gun and make a shift in their early 50s, sometimes even earlier, so that they have enough time to do something significant in this new phase of life and work that's opening up between midlife and true old age.
Damian Burkle, how should a person navigate whether to try to, you know, to keep trying to find a job in the same sector or change careers entirely? Damian? Oh, we don't seem to have Damian on the line right now, so I'm going to go back to Mark. Mark, do you have any advice in that area?
I do. You know, I think that if people have a longer term time horizon and recognize that there is this period that's opening up that previous generations didn't have, and it's not just a new stage of life but of work, to take a long-term perspective, which means that next job you go after doesn't have to necessarily be what you're going to do for the duration. It can be a stepping stone. It also makes sense for many people to go back to school, because if you're going to work another 10 years, maybe even longer, that upfront investment can result in finding work that you're going to look forward to getting up every morning and going to, as opposed to, you know, another 10 years at the grindstone. So I think it's very important for people to view this stage of work much as they viewed earlier stages, one which is going to have there's some room to make some missteps up front. What I encourage people, in addition to the prospect of going back to school, and particularly for many people, community colleges will play a valuable role because they're inexpensive, they're widely present. But for other people, if you can get any kind of direct hands-on opportunity working in those fields, even as a consultant, if it's in the nonprofit sector, as a volunteer, it gives you a much more realistic perspective of chance to see whether this dream that you have of working in an area is actually has any connection to the reality of working in an organization in those fields.
So, in other words, dip your toe in the water before you dive in.
Yeah, there's a considerable body of research from people who study successful career transitions that say as much as there's sense to trying to figure out where your passion resides, that most people who do find their footing do it through an experimental approach. And, you know, as a society, we don't make that so easy. We're much better with young people and helping them get internships and other kinds of ways to get their foot in the door.
Right.
But we don't provide those same kinds of opportunities for people in midlife.
So is it in some people's best interest, and I heard there was a story on Morning Edition this morning done by our public insight journalist Michael Caputo, who was talking with people who have changed jobs or who are looking for work right now. And some of them were talking about the fact that, you know, they have a PhD, but they're not going to put it on their resume because they don't want people to say, oh, they're overqualified, we can't pay them enough, therefore we're not even going to consider them. Do you think that's a reasonable thing to do, to say, you know what, I'm going to dumb down my resume a little bit so I look like a better, potential employee?
It's a sad comment on where things stand now, and I do think that's going to change over time. I think as people get more exposure with workers who are 50 and beyond, they're going to get more sense of how that experience translates into real value. Yeah, I think that. One of the concerns a lot of employers voice is that somebody who's 50, 55, 60, even into their 60s are not going to be around for very long, that this is really a way station between the end of work and the beginning of real retirement. But that doesn't take into account the new reality of this a really quite significant period of time that people are working into their 60s and oftentimes into their 70s. So I think employers, if they realize that somebody is going to be there, is going to be a stable employee, they're much more likely to want to capture that experience than to think that this is somebody who's just passing through.
Right. So now we've been through this before. Back in the early 1980s, I know Minnesota's unemployment rate reached up to 9%. Currently, it's at 6%. So that makes our 6% seem reasonable in some strange way. What lessons did we learn the first time around? Are there lessons we learned from back in the early 80s that we can take and use today?
Yeah. Well, you know, I too have been trying to find some bright spots in all of this. I'll actually. I'd like to look forward for a second before looking back at that period, which is to say that not only for individuals is this period that's coming up of a significant length, but we're going through, if you look ahead 10 years for the country, presumably we're going to weather this recession. I hope it's as short as possible. But there is going to be significant job growth in a whole set of areas, and they tend to be the same areas that Dan McElroy was talking about: education, health care, green collar jobs, the nonprofit sector more broadly are all projected to have significant job growth over the coming decade. And simultaneously, the Bureau of Labor Statistics in December is projecting a 5.5 times growth in the over 55 labor force. So there's two big trends that are developing. You've got lots of people over 50 who are remaining in the workforce, and then you've got a lot of job openings in areas that combine means and meaning. And we're already seeing a trend of people moving into what we at Civic Ventures call encore careers. They're careers that are kind of practical idealism. They have the pay and benefits that we associate with work and that so many need longer into life. They provide that sense of personal meaning. You know, Joseph Campbell, the expert on myths, said that midlife's the time when you get to the top of the ladder and discover it's leaning against the wrong wall. And so, you know, many people, independent of the economic circumstances, they've worked in something for 30 years and it's run its course. They're ready for something different, and they are looking for more meaning in their lives. And they're also looking to have a social impact. They're concerned about what's been happening in a whole set of areas of society with kids who are growing up in low-income neighborhoods, with the environment, in healthcare. And so they're looking to move into careers with a social purpose. We found in a study in June that we did with Peter Hart and Associates, the research firm, that over 5 million boomers and pre-boomers have already shifted into second careers in areas like education, healthcare, and the nonprofit sector, and that half of those who haven't already made that shift give it an 8, 9, or 10, say it's a top priority for them. So in the search for good news in a very difficult time period, there is this longer-term trend of millions of boomers who are looking for work in areas where we're desperate for human beings to do those things that only people can do.
Hmm. Thanks so much for those comments. We're talking today about midlife career transitions. If you'd like to talk, if you join the conversation and share your own experiences, you can reach us at 1-800-242-2828 or in the metro area at 651-227-6000 or go to minnesotapublicradio.org and click on Send a Question. We do have Damian Burkle back with us now. Welcome back to the show, Damian.
Thank you. I felt like I was out in cyberspace.
Oh, yes, but we've got you back. And I'm just interested in your take on how should a person navigate whether to try and find a job in the same sector or change careers? You know, we talked a little bit about this earlier, but I'm particularly interested in your opinion on this, whether it makes – how do you figure out whether it makes sense to keep on working at that same resume and that same job description or to change jobs, change careers entirely?
Well, I think it's a combination of factors. I agree with Mark in that there are lots of people that are making the transition into, you know, a life of mission as opposed to money. But although that's very true, they're going in at a lower pay level and can afford to because they have their retirement. But when you're a 50-year-old and you lose your job, but it's still a viable field, then what I say is compute the number of years you're going to work and then make a decision. You either, you know, strike off into a new area, which will in most cases bring lower pay, or, you know, you take the more practical approach and you dig in and do what you do best, knowing that it's only for a relatively short amount of time. But ultimately, it's the people that can afford to make the mission move in their lives that I've seen than many of the others that are out there in the trenches every week.
Okay.
Maybe I should jump in
and
respond. I think Damian makes an important point there. There are many people who want to do this work, who were planning to do this work, and now with the downturn have to defer because it's going to mean a pay cut for them. But on the other hand, I think it's important for us to remember that work in these areas which seem to be recession-resistant, like education, healthcare, a number of other fields, these are, for the most part, middle-class jobs, particularly in areas that pay benefits. And so for many people, it won't require – it's not voluntarism. It's not saying, okay, I'm going to spend the next 20 years working without pay. But
right.
These are all fields, in many cases, that require a college education. So I think that both of those realities are out there.
Okay. We're talking – go ahead, Damian.
I was going to say, the bottom line comes down to how quickly your unemployment is going to run out. And I know that sounds a little severe, but in the majority of the people that I'm working with, and I see a room full of people every week at our support group, many of them are late 50s, and they're in industries like information technology that is being sent overseas, and they're really put into a real pickle from the standpoint of if my career is disappearing from my town and I want to continue in that field, well, then that means I'm going to have to most likely relocate.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have, you know, kids that are in high school and, you know, two in college, getting up and moving to an entire new state in many cases isn't an option. And I think that's a real challenge because most professionals fall under the radar. And you don't hear a lot about them because they're really forgotten. And OPS, nobody is counted after their unemployment benefits run out. They just drop off as if they were never there in the first place.
Damian, could you talk a little bit about your own experience in changing jobs? Because you've had to make this transition yourself more than once.
Oh, absolutely. Four times.
Wow.
Yeah.
Laid off four times.
Yeah, well, laid off, position eliminated, reorganized out, you know, whatever you want to call it. But basically, I was without work and made the decision to shift into career counseling because it was something that, you know, I've been running the support group for the past 15 years, and it was low-hanging fruit for me and had been apparent for a very long time. But I was always afraid to make the leap.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, once I made that leap, I found that there was much more commonality in terms of what I was doing when you overlay that with everything I did in corporate America. So it made the transition a little less bumpy. But, you know, again, I consider myself a very lucky person. And with so much industry going away so quickly, there's going to be a lot of people that are going to be caught and surprised.
We're talking today about midlife career transitions. If you have a question or have some experience with this yourself, feel free to give us a call with your comment or question at 1-800-242-2828 or in the metro area 651-227-6000 or go to minnesotapublicradio.org and click on send a question. You can get your question in that way. Let's go to Brett in Lake Benton, Minnesota. Brett, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is, I've been listening to the show, and I've been a software engineer for the last 12 years. I was laid off last January from a big bank, local bank, and during my time off looking for work, I went with my nephew to the local Army recruiting station to help him sign up for the military. As I was listening to the sales pitch from the Army, I got interested. Wow, $40,000 signing bonus. It's a low salary, but everything's paid for. I have two children that I have custody in the summertime. The health benefits were tremendous. I'm curious why it's not been brought up, changing careers for the military.
All right. So the military worked out for you as a good option.
I still have to ship. It turned out I shipped to Fort Sill, Oklahoma, and they found out that I have bronchial asthma, so he sent me back. I have to get that figured out first.
Okay. All right. So, Mark, Damien, what are your thoughts on whether the military might be some place where people might want to go right now as a safe haven in terms of, you know, steady work and good benefits?
You know, it's interesting. I was at the Y the other night, and I ran into someone who had spent a relatively long period of time out of work, and in fact, he came up to talk to me because he had been laid off again because of the dip in the economy. But here's the interesting part. Dan is probably 35, and he, you know, delisted from the Navy, and then when he began to see all the different benefits for his family, he reenlisted and was surprised at the welcome that he got and the salary and benefits. And any time that you can find an industry that's growing, I mean, whether it's military or hospital or education, that is a great target. But the issue is this person trained for the new area? And if the person is not trained, how do they get the training? But to your question, the military is a great option.
Okay.
And I think it's part of a larger trend of people turning towards public sector jobs, and part of the reason is health benefits. If you work for the federal government for 5 years, you can buy into the health benefits system for the period beyond when you're in the government. And it's interesting to note that in the military, again, as part of this notion of, you know, this doesn't have to be the ultimate step. It could be a first step in a new direction. The military has a wonderful program called Troops to Teachers, which helps retired military personnel move into public school teaching. And it rests on a very sensible idea that you have somebody who's been working with a bunch of unformed 18-year-olds, you know, in the middle of the desert might not be so bad working with a bunch of unformed 17-year-olds in a classroom.
Interesting.
And it's a way of translating skills. I think we need to do more to help people coming out of the military move into these fields, particularly in healthcare, where there are many people who are working in health-related roles in the military and could fill some of the big gaps we have in areas like nursing.
Let's go back to the phones. We've got Jasmine on the line in Minneapolis. Jasmine, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Thank you.
Hi.
Hi. I have a question. I have a telecom background. I have a bachelor's and master's in engineering, MBA from University of Chicago, and I want to get into medical device industry in Minneapolis. And it's so difficult to network at the high level. You know, getting a job is not too hard, in my view. Getting the right job is extremely difficult. What's the best way to network in the medical device industry, in the healthcare?
All right, good question. Jasmine, Mark, any suggestions?
I think I should defer to Damien on this question. I don't know as much about that aspect of the healthcare industry.
Damien?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it is something that you do need to network into. And your question is, okay, that sounds great, but, you know, how do I find those people? Some of the ways that you can find them is There are a number of companies that make product that is, you know, they compete with each other. If you can find out who the sales rep is and have an opportunity to meet with this person and tell them you're at a crossroads in your career and you want to move into, you know, a new area, and that you thought that this person would be an excellent person to talk to. Another place would be call your doctor and find out, you know, who the people are that call on him. You can do a blind approach to a person. What I recommend is Google the person that you're looking for, find out if there is an article, an award, or anything like that. Send the person a note and congratulate them on whatever their accomplishment is, and then say something like, you know, I know that you're an expert in the area, and, you know, I want to move from field A to field B, and I'd love the opportunity to come in and spend 20 minutes of your time to meet and greet you.
All right. Great advice. We're talking today about midlife career transitions and how to go about it. What are some helpful ways to get you through the transition? We'd also like to hear about your experiences changing careers, what's worked, what's not worked. Join the conversation at 1-800-242-2828 or in the metro area, 651-227-6000. We do have a lot of people on the phone lines right now, so maybe the best thing is to go online to minnesotapublicradio.org, click on send a question, and get your question in that way. We'll get back to this conversation in just a few minutes, but first it's time for an update from the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom with Perry Finelli. Good morning, Perry.
Morning, Marianne. President Bush today signed the bill extending jobless checks 7 weeks or 13 weeks, depending on the state. Meanwhile, investors may be getting some relief today. Stocks have opened higher after a report that Citigroup might put itself up for sale. Earlier, a strong recovery was seen in Asian markets, but it had only a minor impact in Europe. An advisor to President-elect Barack Obama says the reports about Senator Hillary Clinton may soon be confirmed. Barring anything unforeseen, Obama is expected to nominate Clinton for Secretary of State after Thanksgiving. Attorney General Michael Mukasey is said to be feeling better today after collapsing during a speech. A spokeswoman says it appears to be a fainting spell and that there is no indication of a stroke or anything heart-related. She says Mukasey is anxious to get back to work. A judge in McAllen, Texas, hears arguments today on whether to dismiss indictments of Vice President Dick Cheney, former Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, and others. The indictments concern alleged abuse at a federal detention center. Authorities in northeastern Minnesota have arrested four suspects in an investigation into a string of business burglaries. Two men and two women were arrested by St. Louis County Sheriff's deputies and Eveleth and Virginia police. The arrests follow a two-month investigation into numerous business burglaries. The investigation does continue. Two La Crosse, Wisconsin middle school students who brought a corkscrew to class have received 5-day suspensions. Both students were referred to juvenile authorities on the charge of possessing a dangerous weapon on school grounds. The opener had a sharp blade for removing foil on a wine bottle. Partly to mostly sunny skies around the state today. High temperatures, upper teens in the north, middle 20s across the south. Right now in the Twin Cities, the temperature is 13, and the skies are mostly sunny. It is 9:34. This is Minnesota Public Radio News.
A Prairie Home Companion is back in St. Paul this weekend at the Fitzgerald Theater. On stage with Garrison Keeler, singer-songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, and percussive dancer, Kristen Andreasen. Plus the guys, all-star shoe band, the Royal Academy of Radio Acting, Tim Russell, Sue Scott, and Tom Keith. Rush tickets are available for only $10 on Friday at 7 o'clock and for $15 on Saturday at 4:15.
Programming is supported by Minnesota State Colleges and University System. 81% of graduates work or continue their education in Minnesota. We educate Minnesota. We make it work. Online at mnscu.edu.
And we're back. You're listening to Mid-Morning on Minnesota Public Radio News. I'm Marianne Combs, filling in for Carrie Miller. She'll be back on Monday. Do stay tuned. Coming up at 10 o'clock, we're talking about the AIDS virus and how it's changed over the years in terms of our approach to it, how we're treating it, there are new resurgent areas in which it's making a new stronghold. We're going to take a look at where those areas are, who's most vulnerable to it, and also the latest research in finding a cure. That's coming up at 10 o'clock. This hour, we are talking about making career transitions midlife, how difficult it can be, but what's the best way to prepare yourself for it? How do you find a new job when it's a difficult market out there and more people are being laid off? Our guests are Mark Friedman and Damian Burkle. And Damian, could being laid off, particularly in this down economy, in any way be seen as a good thing?
Yeah, it can. And I know this is going to sound like I'm stretching it, but remember, I've been here four times. Especially if you get some professional help in terms of career counseling. It really gives you an opportunity to take a look at, you know, where you've been and where you want to be and how that compares to your principles and your lifestyle. And I can tell you many people that have said that going through a crisis like this has been the best thing that ever happened to them. They don't think so at the time, but if it is managed and has energy, your job search can be a very, very, although hard, interesting experience. You can really stretch yourself.
So this is an opportunity for self-assessment.
Right. And I'll tell you, I had a member of Professionals in Transition tell me that the easiest part of his job search was networking around. He was in a very narrow area within the printing industry. And he said, I just had a blast. I went in to see VPs and presidents and people I would never have a chance to see, except when I was networking and, you know, going in at the recommendation of other people. He said it was fantastic. He said, now I have to go to work. That's the hard part.
Mark?
Well, you know, I heard a quote attributed to Rahm Emanuel recently, that never waste a crisis. And I don't know if that's true at a national level. But, I think, as Damian says, that for many individuals, it can produce, along with the anxiety, a kind of liberation. And the fact is that people who are forced into these transitions it's frequently not through any deficiency on their own. We're just in a period now in working lives where people do have serial careers. It's not that most people are going to continue to work for one place for 40 or 50 years. And so these transitions are inevitable. They're not necessarily easy, but they can lead to a new kind of energy and fulfillment. And accomplishment. Many of the people that I've interviewed over the last couple of years will say, you know, I never believed it at the time, but I'm doing the most important work I've ever done in my life. It's the thing I'm proudest of, and it's at a period of time when previous generations moved to the sidelines.
Hmm. Let's go back to the phones. We've got Mike on the line from Rochester. Mike, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Hi, thank you. Mm-hmm. My comment is about preparing for the emotional aspects of change. My wife and I both have had mid-career changes. She is 50 years old and is now becoming a teacher. She was an engineer. I'm also 50 and am working as a small business owner trying to do a startup. And for those listeners out there who might see changes coming down the pike, I think now is probably a good time to prepare for the emotional aspects of change, and things like just sitting at different places at the dinner table is very uncomfortable if you sat in the same place for years, or parking the car in different sides of the garage, or sleeping on different sides of the bed. Any types of changes one can do in their day-to-day lives perhaps could prepare them. And I was just wondering if there were other ways in preparing for an upcoming change.
All right. Great question. Damian?
You're right on the money about the emotional impact of job loss. And knowing in advance that you are going to go through job loss grieving, at least you weren't like me and you thought you were going crazy, because the emotional highs were so much higher and the lows so much lower, and the swing in emotions, denial and anger and then depression and then denial, just knowing these things can help you prepare for it. But it still doesn't make it any easier to go through. I mean, it is an emotional violation. It is also a physical violation from the standpoint that you're being ripped out of your work environment and, you know, are now just kind of floating out there. To your point, getting ready in advance, you know, getting your resume ready and doing informational networking when you can, all with the thought that job security comes from within. That's what I've learned over the years. There is no external job security, and your average 40-year-old on average will lose their jobs four times between 40 and 65, and at least one of those will be without their choice.
Mm. But what about what Richard was saying in terms of like sort of getting yourself used to change or being a little bit more receptive to change and working your way, building your way up to it through putting change in your life in other areas? Mark?
Well, I think being able to turn to other people who are going through similar experiences and to help support each other is just a critical way of realizing that this isn't a mark of some deficiency on your part, and to just expect that there is going to be this period where of disruption. And you know, in fact, I've been talking to more and more people who actually are trying to proactively have a disruptive period because we do, you know, get so much stuck in various grooves, and that can be good for a while, but at some point we need to just really shake things up. So you have people who will go on volunteer vacations for a month, go to Africa or Latin America, just to have a completely different experience. So I think that there are many ways that this kind of change and disruption, while awkward, can really open us up to possibilities that didn't seem realistic in the past.
We have Misha online who writes from St. Paul. Is there any real value for this audience in electronic networking sites such as LinkedIn?
Ah, touche. Absolutely. LinkedIn, you're really nobody in the professional world. I mean, honestly, unless you have a LinkedIn profile. And LinkedIn is, you know, the place to go for networking online. And it's a great medium for you to find people, and you can, in your summary area, just take your resume and post your resume, because what's going on now what has never been going on before is you have recruiters that will look people up by industry area and LinkedIn just to kind of get a feel for whether they're job searching or not. So social networking is very important and is a valuable tool for you to have in your arsenal. And the other thing is, my experience has been that once you create a LinkedIn profile, when you Google yourself, that's the very first thing that comes up. And that's very important, because I can't tell you the number of people, and we've all heard of them, that have dumb things on their MySpace website, and job searchers, or rather human resources people, go there. And if you have a bad profile out there, you need to do everything you can to fix it, so that, you know, if you like full body tattoos, that's fine. But a human resource manager doesn't need to see a picture of that. And it's very important. And I know of at least two candidates where they Googled them and they tied into their frat boy website, and they were passed on, because basically the group's feeling, the interviewing group, was, well, if this is what he does on a website, I mean, what is it going to be like when he comes to work for us? So good news, bad news. The good news is something like LinkedIn works very well. The bad news is, if you have anything else out there that's trash, find a way to get rid of it.
Let's go back to the phones. We've got Ted on the line from Plymouth. Ted, welcome to Mid Morning.
Good morning. I thought I would just share a quick story about my own experience.
Sure.
I was 25 years in the software industry, 18 with Microsoft, and it was getting to the point where it really didn't matter to me if we won the current database battle or whatever the competition happened to be. I just wanted to do something different. And it took several years of sort of part-time networking and hunting, but I landed a job as a major gifts fundraiser for the Nature Conservancy.
Wow.
And this was on the heels of watching my wife go through a similar thing, where she completely changed lives, went to school, became a pastor. And I guess the point is that you may not want to wait for bad economic times. You may not want to wait for layoffs. I think, you know, particular folks who are in their late 40s, 50s, be proactive. Make the change yourself. Don't wait for the economy to catch up to you and force it upon you.
Ted, great comment. Mark, your thoughts?
Yeah, and in fact, the downturn is often times when people go back to school since that's a period. If you want to become a pastor, for example, or become a teacher, you may well need to go back to school. A downturn is probably a good time to do that. And it, as the last caller was saying, he and his wife are really part of a much larger trend towards towards Encore careers, that people are going to be in for 10, 20 years. And if just 5% of the boomer population were to move in that direction, it could have an enormous impact, not only in their own lives, but in solving some of the big problems that are facing the country in areas like education and health and the environment. Those people who are interested in following a similar course have a lot of resources in the Twin Cities in particular. There's a group called Shift, which has a website, and that provides help. And actually, I just got an email yesterday, coincidentally, from the University of St. Thomas, which is their Center on Nonprofit Management, is hosting a program on December 5th for people over 50 who are thinking of moving into the nonprofit sector. So the Minnesota in general and the Twin Cities in particular are really quite well-resourced for people who want to move into these kinds of Encore careers.
Let's take another call. We've got Jesse on the line in Minneapolis. Jesse, welcome to Mid Morning.
Hi. Hi. I was just calling in because I'm actually in my 30s, and a couple years ago, my mom and dad actually moved across the state, picked up and moved from their small town, and my mom was looking for a job. And one of the things that we found actually really beneficial was she had to suddenly, like, apply for jobs online and do a lot of things with technology that she hadn't had to do before. And I just wanted to recommend to people that if you're making a transition in midlife in a career, that it's a good idea to talk to your kids around addressing some of those technological barriers. Mm-hmm. We actually had a really fun time putting her resume together, and I, you know, helped her turn it into a PDF to upload it online. And I just think there's probably some intergenerational conversation that could happen around this topic in particular. I've always really appreciated the advice my parents have given to me for my career, and it was really a great experience to be able to give something back to them as they were making that transition as well.
I bet. Thanks for your call.
Yeah, thank you.
Damien, do you agree with this, that there's opportunities here for some communication between parents and their kids to say, hey, could you show me how the resumes look these days? What's the going format I should be using, and how exactly do I post it up on the web?
Exactly. And the thing that I'm seeing in the employability lab that I run are 50-plus folks that are struggling to learn technology. And it's what I tell them is, look, every day that you're here, every day that you learn something new, you're going to make yourself more marketable, because having electronic skills now is just assumed when you apply for positions. And also, I want to flip back to the caller prior. I think his question was, you know, is it okay to prepare in advance of, you know, the economy kicking in and getting me, so to speak? And the answer is absolutely. And because of technology, you know, there's all sorts of online sites where you can take e-learning, you can get certified to certified Word and Excel. And also there are community resources that are out there that also can help you. I think the biggest step, though, is to take that responsibility onto yourself and say, you know what, I'm going to build my own job security. And you build that by kind of filling in the holes in your career with the skills that need to be done, and then you bring yourself up to speed, and then you're on par with everybody else. And, you know, whether you're going into a new career right away, or you can see the new career 1 or 2 years down the line, the more prepared you are, the easier the transition will be.
Mark, for older workers, say in their 50s and older, how do they compete with younger workers who are willing to work for less and have some of those technical skills that come naturally to them, having been more involved online since a young age than the older worker?
Well, I think one of the great assets older workers bring is stability. There's a lot of evidence that they're at a point in their lives where they're not churning through one job after another, trying to figure out what's going to be of interest. They're really ready to take a stand, and with people working so much later, oftentimes into late 60s and 70s. The reason that some sectors, retail among them, have latched onto this population is because of that kind of stability. And there's also there's something to be said for experiences as well, and it in a sense of pattern recognition. You know, people who've been around the block, who've seen a variety of different kinds of challenges and crises, are often able to see patterns and able to solve things in a way that's better than they might be the first time around. So many people over the age of 50 are turning to entrepreneurship and social entrepreneurship, and in many ways they're able to do things they just couldn't have done when they were 20 years old. We give out a prize for older innovators. One we gave out last year was a guy named Gary Maxworthy, who spent 35 years in the food distribution business, then went to work for a food bank in his encore career in San Francisco. And because he understood how you distributed food on a wide scale, was able to create a program, Farm to Family, that this past year distributed 60 million pounds of fresh produce to food banks all over California. He could have never done that as an idealistic 22-year-old, but because he'd built up this body of knowledge, he was able to have a much greater impact.
Okay. Let's go back to the phones. We've got Jeff on the line in Minneapolis. Jeff, welcome to Mid Morning.
Hi there, Marianne.
Hi.
I have a 30-plus year career as the founder of a mid-sized nonprofit arts organization here in Minneapolis, and I unexpectedly lost my job here this past summer. I'm 57 years old, and my question relates to the emotional aspect of this. I'm finding that one of the things I'm having to really grapple with is a deep, deep sense of panic, because I am relatively close to the alleged retirement age of 65, and with my skill set having been built very specifically around what it takes to found and run a small to mid-sized arts organization, I really feel like I have to reinvent myself, but I'm panicking because I don't feel like I have a lot of time. So I'm wondering if the commentators could address how can I deal with this, with this sense of panic, calm myself down?
Jeff, that's a great question. Damien, you first.
Sure. You're right on the money. But, you know, you as me as you, meaning, you know, I'm 53, and I know I'll be working until I'm 70, if I'm lucky. But this natural panic of having a very specialized career is perfectly appropriate. The way out of the fear and the panic is plan. And if you develop a plan where you can show people not only your tangible, measurable benefits, but how your expertise can fit within their organization. You know, you're selling the positive. You know, you're not worried about how old you are. What you're selling is the reverse of that, which is how experienced you are. And if you're grappling with, and we all do, you know, what's next, one of the most effective things that I've ever heard, the 5 o'clock club does this, and I do this at TIT, where I ask people to write 7 stories or 10 stories, and write the stories does make a difference, what it's about, but things that you feel good about. And then you can take those stories and lay them out on a dining room table and, you know, get yourself a pen or pencil and start highlighting the things across those stories that you enjoy doing, and then that opens up your core skill set. So is panic appropriate? Yeah. Do you feel vulnerable? Absolutely. But to get better control, planning is by far one of the best ways out of it. Because if you know what's next, then no matter whether it happens or not, you know, you're talking from a position of strength and transferable skills rather than fear.
Mark, what advice do you have for Jeff?
Well, I think so many people in this situation have fear, and it's compounded by exhaustion. You know, I've worked in the nonprofit sector for about the same length of time and long hours, and you get to this point and you're tired as well. And I think if there's any way to take a step back to get a break, we really need a midlife sabbatical, essentially a gap year for all of us aging boomers. But in the absence of that, if you can take a step back and realize that you have at least another significant body of work left in you. It could be 10 years, 15 years. We gave a purpose prize last year to a guy who started his great innovation at the age of 84. He's now 93.
So 57 is pretty young is what you're saying.
It is, and you probably have a couple of more careers, maybe more, left in you. So to take a step back, and then in addition to planning, to try to get some direct exposure in areas which seem appealing, volunteer, try to join the board, if there's any way to structure an internship, so that once you get that kind of direct practical experience, the next steps, I think, will become more clear.
Yeah. We've got a couple of online comments I want to get through here. Matt in St. Louis Park writes, at the age of 30, I switched from engineering to geology. Now I'm 37 and miserable. Know that you will be a good fit for the new work. Learn about yourself first. That goes back to what you said earlier, Mark, about, dipping your toe in the water and sort of volunteering at a job before you start doing it full time. And then Steve in St. Paul writes, do people still cling to the idea that working at one company for their lifetime is expected or possible? And I have to say, I've worked at NPR since I graduated from college, so I'm curious as to what you think about people who try and stay at one place for many, many years. Damien?
Cradle to the grave security is gone. And those that have, if you're a teacher or work for NPR and have the opportunity to be there for your career, unfortunately, you've become the a smaller amount of people. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's important to know that, in some instances, there is, what appears to be security throughout your career. But with our economy being the way that it is and the waves of unemployment that I'm seeing, I would say buckle your seatbelt because it's going to be a rough ride.
Mark, does a person who stays at one company for a long time end up looking more vulnerable because they've sort of clung to that one job rather than, say, somebody who's made a lot of transitions in their life and maybe seem more nimble?
Yeah, and many people's careers are turning out to be a hybrid, particularly people who are in their 50s and 60s who're spanning two different norms in the career in this country. Many people who are at that age now started out when people did spend their whole life with one company and now are forcing to adjust. But I think the key point is that our working lives are really getting stretched. People are starting to work later than they did in the past, and they're going to be working much later. And I think that the new norm really is going to be serial careers nobody in the future will be disadvantaged because they have changed multiple times.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Absolutely.
Well, I'm afraid that's all the time we have for the two of you. This hour has gone by very fast, and we have still a lot of people who have had their questions unanswered. But thank you so much for the time that we've had, and we'll maybe probably have to revisit the topic in some time. So thanks to both of you.
Thanks, Marianne.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
Damien Berkel is the founder of Professionals in Transition and author of Career Bounce Back. Mark Friedman is the author of Encore, Finding Work That Matters in the Second Half of Life. And he's the founder of Civic Ventures. If you missed any part of this hour, like to hear more, you can go to our website at minnesotapublicradio.org and visit the mid-morning page. And do stay tuned. Coming up in the next hour, we're going to be talking about AIDS, the HIV virus, and what developments have been in finding a cure, in treating the disease, and, of course, how are we doing at educating people and preventing the spread of the disease? That's coming up at the 10 o'clock hour. And coming up at 11 on midday, Gary Eichten's guest to discuss the future of the auto industry and U.S. manufacturing is Fred Zimmerman, retired University of St. Thomas professor of technology management and engineering. And over the noon hour, University of Minnesota history professor Sarah Evans speaking about the history of women in politics.